Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is March 6, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is The Batman Effect on Improving Perseverance. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Casey Parker. Casey is a rural generalist working in Broome, Australia. He has a particular interest in emergency care, Aboriginal health, pediatrics, trauma, and women's anesthesia. Casey has this great blog and podcast called Broome Docs. Welcome to the SGEM, Casey.
Thanks for having me, Ken. It's an absolute privilege to be here. I've been a huge fan of the SGEM for a long time now, and I kind of feel a bit like a B celebrity that's wandered onto the red carpet. There's some huge imposter syndrome taking on here.
And you wonder why I'm sitting here doing the podcast wearing a bat doc mask. All right, so tell the SGEMers more about Broome. And I'm not talking Broome Docs. Tell us about Broome, because I'm not exactly sure where this is in Australia.
Yeah, so Broome is as far from anywhere that you can get in Australia from any of the big capital cities. So right up on the northwest coast, sort of closer to Bali or Java, if you think in terms of international. So we're much closer to Bali than we are to any of our local cities. And it's a tropical, beautiful little town that sits on the coast. It's always sunny. It's always sandy. It's just a lovely place to live. It's usually quite warm, but this month, Ken, we're in the monsoon, and we've had more than a meter of rain fall in a couple of days. So we're actually an island at the moment. All of our roads have been taken out by this storm. So it's been a really interesting time of year, and logistics of emergency medicine have been challenging.
Well, I'm just going to pause there for a second, Casey, because we do have a large group of people that listen from the United States. You're aware of the United States of America, correct?
I've heard of it. Yeah, it's near Canada. Is that right?
Yeah. It's just the big pink blob below Canada. They didn't adopt the metric system. So I'm just going to translate for you. All the American listeners, a meter is about 3 feet of rain. 1 meter of rain is about 3 feet. So I just wanted to make sure we're inclusive here. Your FOMED project includes Broome Docs, but it's also a blog and also a podcast. And you're doing that now with Justin Morgenstern.
Yeah. So Justin's at least in my top five favorite Canadians, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And Justin and I met a couple of years back in the SMAC that was in Dublin. And I'd always been a huge fan of his Articles of the Month series. I just really love that practical evidence-based medicine. So I hoodwinked him at breakfast one morning and said, mate, we're going to do a podcast together. And he sort of blinked and sort of nodded, and it's been a one-way street ever since. So it's been a lot of fun to work with Justin.
Well, let's be clear. He probably said sorry, then blinked, and then said, okay, I'd be happy to do it, because he's Canadian. You know what I was impressed with doing my homework on you is that you started Broome Doc in 2011, and this is before FOMED actually officially existed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started it really after reading a couple of pages of Life in the Fast Lane. And those guys were in my tertiary referral hospital at the time. So Chris Nixon and Mike Cadogan were in the local, which is only 2,000 kilometers away, emergency department. And so I went and met with those guys and had a bit of a chat, and they said, you should do it. And so off I went, and those guys were really helpful for getting me started. So I've got a lot of paying forward to do in terms of FOMED.
Well, I've been working rural communities for over two decades now, and one of the things that I've found defining rural physicians is early adopters. You guys find something, you think it works, you just grab hold and run with it. And so starting a blog and a podcast involving, you know, medicine and medical education before it actually got formalized in 2012, I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. And I guess one of my inspirations is you guys, because it's all about that knowledge translation. And especially in rural Australia, knowledge translation can take 30 years. Often we graduate from medical school and stick with that practice forever because we're so isolated. But I think that the FOMED world's a real game changer and has allowed us to really practice, you know, up-to-the-minute medicine, which is really crucial for our patients.
Well, I'd like to get on to talking about this paper that involves Batman. And when this study came out, for some reason, I'm not exactly sure why, a lot of people in the Twitterverse sent it to me.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. I know I sent it to you, Ken. And I guess it's because we often see you hanging out with Bat-Doc at conferences. Actually, now that I think about it, I've never seen you and Bat-Doc in the room at the same time. That's weird.
Easy, easy there. Don't give away any secret identities there.
Okay, I won't.
Well, you and I have actually done a Bat-Doc video together.
We have, and you know what, Ken? I was thinking about this the other day. I can't even remember which smack it was. There are so many of those smacks where there's just you meet a million people in the foyer at the coffee break. And I remember it was one of those. And I think from memory, I was trying to pin down Weingart on some question, and you hoodwinked me and chucked me in a booth and asked me a question.
Well, yeah, it was a smack dub, and probably you don't remember it because it was in Ireland, right? Maybe there was a lot of fun the night before. I'm not sure. I'm not saying what happened. I was there with Weingart, and we did a little Bat-Doc video where he went, Weingart here, and I went, Bat-Doc here, and he went, Weingart here, and I went, Bat-Doc here, and it just got funnier and funnier. But we did one together, and of course, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. But give us a case that we can frame this whole episode talking about the Batman effect.
All right, Ken, so here's the case. You just imagine it's the middle of the flu season. You're in an endless stream of patients with the sniffles, snots, and sneezes, and the waiting room is heaving with mildly unwell men, all of whom have the worst flu ever. Now, you're the statistician. I'm not sure that they can all have the worst flu ever. I'm pretty sure someone has to be average.
It's pretty skewed, yeah. But I don't have to imagine, okay? This, we're in winter now. I know you're in your summer over there in the southern hemisphere. But I don't have to imagine, oh, I'm living the dream right now. And we're all familiar with that dreaded man cold where he calls out, Pam, call my mother.
Oh, yes. So anyway, the residents are working double shifts in order to cover their comrades who have fallen to the flu. They're doing their best to avoid prescribing antibiotics in an SGM sort of way. And whilst they're avoiding being coughed upon, they're writing lots and lots of endless and uninspiring discharge letters to the primary care docs. It's truly a tedious task that of Sisyphean proportions. So as the senior doctor working in the emergency department, you wonder, how can I keep their spirits up? How can I keep their nose to the grindstone, maintain some momentum? We need to maximize their perseverance and limit distraction from any tedium such as Facebook or Twitter or anything else that might be more fun going on around them.
Well, Casey, you know working in the emergency department is very tough. Sometimes it feels like it would take superhuman skills and strength just to finish the shift.
That's true, Ken. And you know, there are a few comic book superheroes that were actually physicians and doctors. And most probably people are familiar with Marvel's Doctor Strange. He was a neurosurgeon who had his hands injured in a terrible car accident. And in a desperate search to try and fix his injuries, he turned to the occult and to Eastern medicines or mysticism. You'd be a fan of him, wouldn't you, Ken?
I'm going to say no, because I'm not a big fan of Doctor Strange because of all the mystic woo. As a skeptic, a nerd, and a scientist, I have a hard time accepting anything outside the natural world.
Fair enough. Well, Soranak Naitu was also a neurosurgeon. She was the daughter of Sinestro, who was a member of the Green Lantern Corporation. So maybe that's more your thing?
Oh, well, that is kind of cool. Now she wasn't in Feminem, that's females in emergency medicine. She was a femineurosurge, or a female in neurosurgery.
Yeah, that's not quite as catchy a hashtag, but oh well, we'll roll with it. Did you know that Thor, the god of thunder, was once transformed into a physician named Donald Blake? And that was in an earlier comic book series.
You know, I did not know that, but Thor is one of my favorite superheroes. And it's not because of the recent movies. This is because of my Icelandic heritage. I actually have an Uncle Thor, and he has a day of the week named after him, Thor's Day.
Cool. Well, we all know, Ken, that your real favorite superhero is Batman.
Yeah, I really do like Batman.
I'm sitting here looking at you in the mask, and I'm thinking, why Batman? Why not Superman or the Green Lantern or someone else?
Well, because he doesn't have any special superpowers. He wasn't bitten by a radioactive spider. He's not draining energy from our yellow sun. He just trained really hard physically and mentally.
Yeah, fair enough. It doesn't hurt to be a billionaire as well.
Well, I could take that. Yeah, I could take that. But you know what? I just wanted to throw out a few Batman fun facts before we move on to this structured, critical appraisal of this recent publication. So fun fact number one, Bruce Wayne, Batman's secret identity, came from two historical figures, Robert the Bruce, a Scottish national hero, and Mad Anthony Wayne, a hero of the American Revolution. Didn't know that. Fun fact number two. There was a Batman course taught at the University of Victoria in Canada called The Science of Batman. I bet you if I had taken that course, I would have done very, very well in it. And the third thing, Andy Warhol directed the first ever Batman movie back in 1964, but it was made without the consent of DC Comics. But that's enough fun facts from Batman. Give us the clinical question.
All right, Ken. So the clinical question is, does self-distancing by dressing up as a superhero such as Batman enhance perseverance at a tedious task?
And there's actually a reference for this.
Yeah. So there's a paper by White et al. Entitled The Batman Effect, Improving Perseverance in Young Children, and this was in Child Development in December 2016.
I just love that title, The Batman Effect. Wonderful. Okay, let's go through the PICO. What was the population?
So the population were typically developing 4-year-old and 6-year-old children from the Minneapolis area.
Well, I'm glad you put it that way, because when I first read this, I thought it was typically developing 46-year-old children. And I just read through that quickly, and I'm probably an atypical developing 50-year-old child. But it's 4-year-olds and 6-year-old children from the Minneapolis area. And they had no exclusions listed. What was the intervention?
So the main intervention was to impersonate an exemplar such as Batman while doing a repetitive task for about 10 minutes. They were asked to ask themselves, is Batman working really hard?
Yeah, they had this repetitive task, and it was a simple go, no-go, slow process that they did on the computer. And the children were told the task was very, very important, and it would be helpful if they worked hard on it and as long as they could. But they were also told they could take a break by playing an extremely attractive video game.
So the other exemplars they could dress up as, aside from Batman, were Bob the Builder, Rapunzel, or Dora the Explorer. And the choice was obvious here, really. Why would anyone go past Batman?
Oh, I know. They didn't list who picked what, but I can't believe anybody didn't pick Batman. All right, what did they have for their control?
So the control, they did the same repetitive task with the same distraction, but instead of being dressing up as Batman, they were asked to either do it from a third-person perspective, such as asking themselves, is Casey working hard? Or also doing it as a first-person perspective, am I working hard? So they were doing different degrees of separation of the self.
Yeah, so they separated themselves by putting on a mask or a cape or dressing up as someone. That was one way of distancing themselves. Another way was asking them in a third person. So is Ken working hard? And then the third way was to ask them in the first person perspective, am I working hard? What did they have for their primary outcome?
The primary outcome was the percentage of time that the children spent on the assigned task as opposed to the fun task.
And how about their secondary outcomes?
So the secondaries were the effect of the age, so 4 versus 6-year-old children. Also, they looked at the various stages in terms of the theory of mind, executive function, and also dimensional change. So whether they could sort lots of other psychological sort of tests, which they could grade the children as to where they were developmentally.
And the author's conclusions were, quote, perseverance can pave the pathway to success. Indeed, William James famously noted that the, quote, faculty of voluntarily bringing back a wandering attention over and over again is the very root of judgment, character, and will. However, he also lamented the difficulty in teaching this important life skill. The current research suggests that perseverance can be taught through role play, a skill that is accessible to even the very young children. All right, Casey, it's time to cruise through that quality checklist, and we have 11 questions for this kind of trial. The first question, the study population, did it include or focused on those in the emergency department?
No, Ken. These were children from the Minneapolis area who may or may not have attended an emergency department in Minneapolis, but not part of the trial.
All right, the patients, were they adequately randomized?
Yes, they were. They were randomly assigned to one of the three groups.
And did they conceal the randomization?
Well, yeah, we don't even know how the randomization was done, so it wasn't written in the trial.
Yeah, so really good randomization process. Nobody knew how you did it. All right, number four, the patients, were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes, they were, and this is a lab trial, so this is really easy to get right.
All right, and how about the recruitment? Did they recruit these individuals consecutively?
No, Ken, these were volunteers that were recruited from a university database. The mum got $10 and the kid got a t-shirt.
Oh, I'm all about the t-shirt. I love the swag.
I hope it was a Batman t-shirt.
Well, it better been a Batman t-shirt. I don't want to walk out of there with a Dora the Explorer t-shirt, okay? Come on, Vominos, everybody, let's go. Swiper, no swiping. The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Well, we don't really know for sure. However, as part of the antecedent lead into the experiment, they did test them all for autism and other developmental problems. So they were generally normal children.
Number 7, all participants, were they unaware of their group allocation?
No, Ken, they were not, because they were allowed to choose their own superhero costume. And let's face it, most of them chose Batman, so they knew who they were.
And I think the evaluators, the assessors, the people watching them could have figured out, is that Batman? Is that Bob the Builder? Rapunzel or Dora the Explorer? But you know they were all Batman. All right, number 8, the groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
Was their follow-up complete?
Yes, they had 100% because this was a lab trial.
And all patient important outcomes, were they considered?
Well, we don't really know because these aren't really patients and it's hard to know how this applies to our work.
And the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Well, once again, we're not really sure.
All right, let's run through the key results. They recruited 180 children with $10 in a t-shirt, and there was about a 50-50 male-female split. What was the primary outcome, though?
So the primary outcome, dressing up as a superhero, such as Batman, resulted in a longer time spent on the task.
And when you drill down into that primary outcome, what did they find?
So what they found was that children were proportionally spending more time on the task with increasing degrees of self-distancing. So as they became taking a further and further perspective on themselves, they seemed to spend longer on the task. However, the 95% confidence intervals seemed to overlap quite a bit in this trial.
And how about those secondary outcomes? Because they had a number of secondary outcomes that they also evaluated the children for.
Yeah, so as you'd expect, 6-year-olds showed more perseverance than 4-year-olds. And also the time on task was also positively correlated with things like higher executive function, more advancement in their theory of mind. So kids that were more psychologically developed spent more time on task, and that sort of makes sense.
Casey, you know what time it is?
What time is it, Ken?
It's time to talk nerdy to me. You ready to go?
Oh, I can't wait.
Do you want to have a guess on how many points we're going to bring up?
4 or 5. 5, I reckon.
Oh, I think, you know, if we're going to count to 4, we're going to go right to 5. Okay, you've got the first of the 5.
Okay, let's talk about selection bias. We do not know if this cohort recruited from a university population database can be generalized to other children. And let's face it, they're Americans. Maybe there's more superhero worship in the States.
Yeah, you never know. Number 2, the child and parent-oriented outcome. They measured a surrogate outcome of attention to a repetitive task. Would this translate into a child or parent-oriented outcome like improvement in overall school performance or behavior at home?
Number 3, the effect and the effect size. So I can see that it's entirely possible that the effect of wearing a superhero costume is just enough to make a boring task fun and make kids persist. So it's really hard to say, do the clothes make the kid, or is this just a side effect? What if they could wear costumes that represented other jobs, like a doctor or a nurse or a firefighter, police officer, construction worker, pretty much anyone from the village people?
Well, the effect size did not seem that impressive to me. I mean, it appeared not to be statistically significant. When I was looking at those 95% confidence intervals, they overlapped. And therefore, if it's not statistically significant, I'm not sure it's going to be clinically significant.
And you know me, Ken, I'm all about the Bayes. So whenever I look at these trials, I like to take a Bayesian approach. And you have to think about what's the pretest probability that this is going to work. And this is a psychology paper. And we're talking about some pretty wishy-washy theories here. So it's a pretty weak pretest, and it would have to have a huge p-value with no overlap before I'd even think that this effect was real. So probably not a great paper to prove anything.
If you're listening to the podcast regularly, you know probably how my mind thinks. So as soon as you brought up Bayesian, and I'm like, it's all about the Bayes, no treble. It's anyways. All right, number four, self-talk. It's interesting that this self-talk seems to enhance performance. We hear a lot of this from our Sims and stress inoculation gurus. Maybe this phenomenon can explain some of the improvement seen. The authors comment on the fact that the nature of the questioning encouraged self-talk.
Yeah, for sure. And point number five is about role modeling. Is Batman really a great role model for hard work? Like, sure, Bob the Builder, he's always out doing lots of construction. But Batman, you know, Kenny sleeps all day. He plays all night. He lives in a mansion. He's got a manservant to do his beggings. Not exactly sure he's the picture of hard work. Maybe a female superhero like Wonder Woman. Or maybe a Black Panther figure would be even better.
Oh.
We'd love to see the results.
Well, there you go. We have our five nerdy points, and we may have drifted off into a bit of geekiness, too. But let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SJAM's conclusions.
Yeah, so I think that we can say that this experiment shows that children seem to persist at a task more if they have an exterior perspective on the situation. And this also seems to be increased if they role model a superhero during that task.
So give us a bottom line.
So the most important thing is to be yourself, Ken. Unless you can be Batman. And if you can be Batman, always be Batman.
Oh, I love that meme. Okay, give us a case resolution of those hardworking residents.
All right, so we're back on the floor. We're going to encourage all our residents to wear a superhero t-shirt under their scrubs and ask themselves throughout the shift, is Bat Doc working hard? In order to improve their persistence at these menial tasks, we should encourage role modeling of superheroes. Let's face it, there's no downside to wearing a t-shirt under your scrubs. Maybe a colleague or an attending or a teacher who works hard on the floor could be their superhero that they could role model. Anyway, after wearing the t-shirts, the waiting room gets cleared quickly. No one ever catches the flu on staff and the dreaded man flu disappears. Some of the residents go to the Batcave lab and come up with a cure for the man flu. The world is safe once again.
How are you going to apply this clinically?
So maybe as we work as role models to students and residents, we should try to be that hero, the one that they will one day try to emulate in order to either improve their own work performance.
And what are you going to tell the resident?
When faced with a difficult, tedious, or just face it, soul-destroying task, maybe they should put on a superhero t-shirt and ask themselves, what would Bat Doc do?
Oh, and there we go. So we're going to challenge all the SJAM listeners out there. If you're listening to this, get out your superhero t-shirt, put it on, take a selfie, and send it to tag Casey and myself with the hashtag, What Would Bat Doc Do? It's time to announce the Keener Contest winner, and last week's winner was Peter Talanchi. He knew the predicted 30-day mortality with a curb score of 1 is 2.7. At least that's the answer we were looking for. But Kirsty Challen from Paper and a Pick told me that it's a little bit more complicated. And the true answer is, it all depends. What's the question this week?
The question this week, Ken, is, what superhero villain once broke Batman's back, leaving him crippled and wheelchair-bound?
Ooh, if you know this super Keener question, then send your answer to the sjam@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, Casey, I went out to that internet and searched the FOMED world to see if there was any other critical appraisals on this paper. And surprise, surprise, it was not covered by Rebel EM. It was not covered by Alium. It wasn't in Core EM. It wasn't on EM Literature of Note. Nobody, not even St. Emlyn's, has covered this important paper. So if you want to know about the Batman effect, you're going to have to listen to the SJAM.
Well, actually, Ken, Justin and I did cover this paper on the Broom Docs podcast, so you can listen to Justin's thoughts on it right there.
There we go. All right, well, thanks for being such a super guest skeptic, Casey.
Thanks, Ken. It's been a lot of fun, and no superhero t-shirt was required to get through to the end.
Now, I'm going to ask you, the final task is, can you give the SJAM tagline, but in your best superhero voice?
Okay, Ken, I'll try and be Batman. Okay, listeners, remember, always be skeptical of anything you learn. even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to you next week.